Welcome to the ITAD Talk Podcast with your host, Jeff Bittner.
Our guest this afternoon is Derek Bond. He's an avid computer hardware and gaming enthusiast, independent filmmaker, and book lover. In his spare time, he manages ComSources LLC as its chief operating officer and co-founder. Derek has a wide range of professional experience, including marine conservation, retail and wholesale management, IT services, advertising, graphic design, and event planning. So I thought where we might want to start is if you could tell me a bit about ComSources.
ComSources is your typical third-party wholesaler. So, you know, we deal a lot with either VARs or recycling companies who deal with end users, data centers, banks, hospitals, et cetera, that are either upgrading or getting rid of their old IT hardware for one reason or other. And we, our real bread and butter is telecom and networking. So any kind of IP, you know, VoIP desk phones or networking switches, routers, access points, that's where our, you know, absolute expertise is as far as getting the most value out of that material. And we do deal with things like, you know, servers, desktops, laptops, you know, headsets, anything else that kind of goes in that business category. But our bread and butter is primarily the telecom and the networking.
Yeah, so that actually kind of went along with my next question, was like, where does the bulk of the business come from? For example, we specialize in enterprise servers and components thereof. And on your side, I noticed that VARs seem to have a prominent role for your company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, we do have a book of business stretching back 20, 25 years. That you know, we have some end users and we do deal with, you know, schools and hospitals and things direct sometimes, but a lot of our bulk really does come from those VARs and those recycling companies. And you know, we've gone right through the entire U.S. phone book on different VARs and recycling companies to find the ones that seem to be the best fit for us, that have, you know, the best quality gear, that have the best professional relationship, you know, the ones that we can actually do a return with. Like,
yeah,
talking to Dan from Terabit, yep. And you were saying that you had, you know, such an issue sometimes with recyclers doing returns, yeah, or honoring, you know, RMAs.
Yeah, that's true.
And we've definitely seen it. So, you know, we deal with ones that we have a really good working relationship with, that we can do net terms and that we can be sure that we're going to, you know, get returns for, because, you know, a lot of this stuff is coming out of, say, Texas, where, you know, a hurricane will blow through every now and then and flood a data center. You know, so sometimes a lot will show up and it'll be just absolutely flooded and corroded, and you know, we've got to return 80% of it or,
yeah,
something.
I know it's so hard to put like a average price on a lot that you're thinking, mm-hmm, is okay, maybe it's like a B grade, and you know, maybe a little of it will be better and a little of it will be worse, and then you get it and then, you know, a lot of it doesn't work for whatever reason, or it's, you know, scratched or flawed, or in some way the stickers are torn off and things like that.
Yeah.
It really, there's just not any value to some of that material.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the things that we are able to get value out of is downstream from us. We deal with a lot of, you know, people that have refurbishing processes on site, and we, you know that we can send them some B grade or even C grade stuff as we would grade it, and that they're going to understand that, you know, it may need a new coat of paint, or it may need just a little bit of touch up on stickers, or, you know, one thing or other. And we do get, you know, A grade and really high B grade stuff that's ready immediately for redeployment. But, you know, we've got that good working relationship with people that can take stuff that, you know, isn't absolutely pristine, and that really does help a lot, you know, keep the returns low going back to our suppliers, because if we can remarket, you know, for a lower dollar amount, if we can remarket those C grade things, then, you know, we can avoid returns as much as possible.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely a key when you're dealing with recyclers, is that they, you know, don't want to take a lot of returns, and if you can opt out of that in some way and come to some sort of pricing agreement, then it's kind of a win-win, and it keeps the relationship flowing. It's just that you have to kind of temper your price estimates sometimes, right? But I mean, it always helps getting pictures and like, so now is this the best one in the box or right?
Yeah. Oh, and then, I mean, sometimes, you know, some of these bars and recyclers never even touch the stuff. It'll come straight out of a customer's site, and they've, you know, ordered a white glove service or something to go in and do the actual takeout.
Right.
So they may have never even seen it, and it'll show up here. And sometimes it's absolutely beautifully packed, brilliant and perfect, and foam around everything. And sometimes it's just a nightmare, you know, a rat's nest of broken material. And, you know, just you take the good with the bad. And that's actually kind of what we are, is we're kind of a filter for that gear. You know, a lot of these companies that do the refurbishment and that do the full recertification, you know, we're kind of their first step, and we can cut out a lot of that initial work for them by taking, you know, 3 or 4 pallets of stuff that comes out of a recycler, distilling it down to, you know, a pallet or two of good, higher grade material that is, you know, the exact part they want. You know, they know exactly what quantity they're getting then, at what price. We'll repack it, you know, nicely for them so that it's not going to be damaged or anything in transit. And that way, when they receive it, they can, you know, skip several hours of sorting on their end. You know, and that's a value add for them. They can get back to refurbishing and recertifying things.
So if you have to do, you know, take, you know, a few pallets or shipments like you're talking about, where you might have to have some, you know, repainting done or send it to, a second vendor to have, you know, some of the repairs done in everything. So how long does a turn like that take? Is that like a 30-day, a 45-day, or a 60-day turn?
I mean, it, you know, like anything else in this industry, it kind of depends on what's going on all around it, because you're never just working on one order at a time. You know, I might get a small pallet of only 10 or 15 switches, and I can turn that around in half an hour, you know, get a couple of people. We tear into it, unpack it, scan it in, give it a good quick test, a good quick look over, you know, make sure that it's up to our grading standards, and then go ahead and flip it for an order. Or it could be 3 pallets of material along with several other POs that I've got running at the same time. And yeah, it may take up to a month of, you know, filtering through it while I'm also dealing with other tasks and other sales orders.
That kind of leads into my next question. So how has your thinking changed about operations since your introduction to processing back in 2016? For example, many corporations attempt to make significant changes quickly and often realize over time that consistent but modest changes work better over time for the team.
Yeah, so back in 2016, I think it was 2016 that I started at Nextech, actually. I started there just as an entry-level operating person. Actually, I was persuaded to go into sales, but I made the deal that if I absolutely hated sales, please just let me work in operations. and that worked out. I hated sales. I was fine with it, but I hated it. It wasn't the life for me. I very happily, you know, walked back downstairs to operations and put on a pair of dirty gloves and started moving things. but back when I started there, you know, my only experience as far as logistics really was in retail. So I was pretty fresh into the wholesale and into the warehouse kind of mindset. And, you know, there was a lot of inefficiency just as, you know, everybody learns it and the processes change and the materials change. And then I want to say about a year and a half later, Mark Jaffe, who was a senior sales rep at Nextech at the time and is now our CEO here at ComSources, he really dug into Lean and Six Sigma and, you know, Kaizen kind of processing, and, you know, came down from Minnesota to Mississippi here, really kind of helped jumpstart Nextech on that thought process, like Lean processing. And from there, you know, the whole idea was, let's gradually cut out inefficiencies, gradually make every process a little bit easier and a little bit faster, and really distill it down to what makes us money versus what is just a time and material sink. And a year and a half ago, when we started ComSources, we were able to, you know, essentially start with a clean slate, a small team, and just do the few processes that really generated a high amount of margin with a low amount of effort, while also, you know, simplifying the process, like I said, for our downstream customers.
Yeah, you know, we've worked on Lean also. And so one question I have, and I'm just wondering if you kind of had to do the same thing, but when we first started doing Lean, we've got a ton of resistance. I was wondering if you had the same. Of course, you said you started with a new set of people, so maybe it was different because you got them from the get-go, but I was just curious how that ended up going for you.
So, I mean, you know, Lean, I suppose if you've got, you know, people that are absolutely set in their ways and you've got a very specific documented process on how to do things, then there might be some pushback. But at Nextech, you know, with changing hardware and changing times and changing reps and changing downstream vendors and everything, you know, it was a pretty constantly evolving place. So there really wasn't much pushback to Lean because just focused on a few core ideals, like, you know, reducing tack time and reducing, you know, the amount of steps you have to walk from station to station or from supply to supply. So, you know, it was kind of a no-brainer for everybody there. Everybody was pretty receptive of it. And they, you know, once there was a little bit of grumbling that people got over of, oh, you know, we've got this new process, it made sense to everybody. It was, you know, let's make it easier. Let's not overcomplicate it. It's all in everybody's power to do. You know, we didn't really micromanage back at Nextech. So, you know, if somebody was kind of the master of their desk domain or their work area, it was, well, you know, it's in your power to make it easier on yourself. You know, you can label things, you can put things closer to your desk, you can, you know, process things in serial or parallel, just depending on what makes it easier for you. So, no, there wasn't really a lot of pushback. And then when we started here, there wasn't any pushback at all, because my only two employees actually when I started were my girlfriend and my father-in-law.
Oh, so nice.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.